On the Mic podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I have comedian Andrew Slater. You may recognize Andrew from the sports show with Norm Macdonald, Conan O'Brien, MTV, Comedy Central, many other great things, as well as Last Comic Standing. So Andrew is in town today at Wise Guys Comedy up in Ogden, 269 the historic 25th Street. I'd actually never been up to the Wise Guys in Ogden until last night when Andrew and I recorded this episode. And it's a really, really cool area of town if you're up in the Salt Lake area and up in Ogden. This episode, unfortunately, it was cut a little bit short. I ended up being a little late getting up there. There was a chemical spill on the freeway, and Utah freeways aren't that bad compared to other areas of the country. And what should have been an hour drive took me almost 2 hours to get up to Andrew. So yeah, kind of sucked. I hate being late to anything, and I felt like such an idiot getting up there and meeting with Andrew. And unfortunately, it cut into the time because Andrew had a show to do last night. Make sure you guys get up to Wise Guys Ogden and check that out. It's a lot of fun sitting down and catching up with Andrew. I had first kind of bumped into Andrew at Flapper's Comedy in Burbank a few years ago. And it was cool to catch up with him. And it's been fun watching his career continually rise and being able to see him on Conan and Last Comic Standing. And being able to see, you know, some of these great feats that he's accomplished. And it was fun to sit down and talk with Andrew and learn a little bit about his background and, you know, what inspired him in comedy and, you know, kind of the path that his comedy career has taken. And yeah, I think you guys will really enjoy this episode. It's a real good look inside the career of a comedian that's, you know, has a really stable career and is just continuing to grow. I'm glad a lot of you guys enjoyed last week's episode with Andrea and Zach from You Again. I'm actually getting ready to head to set in just about an hour here to film my episode of You Again, so I'm really excited to still be a part of that show. And I hope you guys, if you guys haven't checked out that episode yet, make sure you go back and listen to that. Make sure you donate to their Indiegogo and help them kind of finish funding this film, even though there's a lot of great producers on it. You know, it costs a lot of money to make a movie and make a web show. So, you know, make sure you go and help them out. Kick them a little bit of money to help them finish this project. 12 episodes takes a lot of time and effort. And, you know, I'm really honored to be a part of this show. And, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I look forward to filming with them today. So if you haven't listened to that episode as well, go check that out. Huge thank you again to Andrew for taking the time to sit down before his show last night. This is such a fun episode. I always love talking to comics and especially people that have written on shows to kind of find out their process and learn, you know, more about what their experience has been within the industry and just hear all of just the crazy things. Especially, I mean, he talks a little bit about, you know, being in the writer's room with Norm Macdonald and his experience with that. And that was really cool to hear about, as well as, you know, when he went on to Conan and what that experience was like. It's a really, really, really cool story. So if you guys enjoy this episode, again, go see Andrew Slater tonight, Wise Guys Comedy in Ogden, 269 historic 25th Street. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Josh Funatalaki, I'm probably just butchered his last name, but I know he's opening the show, as well as Alex Valuto, so make sure you go check them out as well. It's a really great show. Tickets are just $10. You can also get those on wiseguyscomedy.com or at the door. You know, make sure you get out there. Go check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. You guys won't regret it. Hope you guys enjoy this episode with Andrew Slater.
I got a challenge going on this week that I'm going to lose. And it's not fair because you come to Utah, you lose an hour.
Yeah.
So.
Now, when I was in LA a couple weeks ago, I started... really making sure that I was like, I'm not losing any of my Fitbit. Like, I have to make sure that I'm maintaining this. And like the first day in town, there was the day of the Oscars, and we were going up to a couple of little like small little Oscar festivities and stuff. And walking from our hotel, it was just on Sunset and Highland, and walking up to the Hollywood Bowl, but then having to walk back down.
Did I know exactly which hotel you stayed at?
And then walking to Meltdown later on that night. I ended up hitting 25,000 steps that day.
Nice.
I was just like, and the next day I couldn't walk at
all. That's across the street. That hotel's across the street from this place called The Wood. You ever go there? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's this bar. It's a cool bar. You would never know
which bar you're talking about.
Yeah. You would think it's a dive, but it's actually kind of a cool guy place. And it's where I went on my first date with my wife.
Oh, nice.
At that bar. And she was as sketched out by it from the outside as you probably were looking at it from your
Well, half of that stuff right there now is closed. I was really looking forward to the little greasy Chinese food place that was right there, right across from Hollywood High School.
And around as I got into town. Oh, yeah. All those places are closed.
Yeah, they're all closed. I was
Chick-fil-A
so sad.
Put them all out of business.
Really?
There used to be a Fat Burger across the street.
Yeah.
Gone.
There was the Quiznos that was right there.
Yeah, Quiznos.
Which they moved to Quiznos down by Ralph's now.
Yeah, there's like a million Quiznos. Yeah. But Chick-fil-A killed everybody. Or the guy who just... You know, it's funny that strip mall, everything's gone except for one, like, dentist.
Yeah.
On the second story. See, in LA's got all these second story strip malls, which are the creepiest thing to me, to go up the stairs.
Yeah, they are.
Anything up there is bad news. There's no reason to ever go to the second story of a strip mall. That's a policy I live by. But that's like kind of an LA.
It's like where all the weed shops I noticed are now. They're all the second
massage parlors.
Yeah,
like a Thai foot massage place. Always dentists.
See, and one of the last times there, and I told the story on the podcast before, I had worn the wrong shoes,
mm-hmm.
and we were staying almost down, and like right across from UCB on Sunset, and for some reason in my head, Meltdown was a hell of a lot closer than it actually was.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a really long walk, and in the wrong shoes, and I ended up with bad blisters.
Ah.
And... All I kept complaining to one of my buddies that was with me. I was like, seriously, like, my feet are just killing. Like, I was waddling half the time. And at the same time, we were complaining about, you know, they need to legalize, like, medicinal pot in Utah. This is just bullshit.
Yeah.
And then we pull up to the Wendy's that's right there, kind of next to the Guitar Center and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And right next to each other is a weed shop and a podiatrist.
Yeah.
And he was just like, dude, if there's ever a time to believe in God, it's right now.
That's funny.
But they're both second floor.
That Wendy's is the worst Wendy's.
Yeah.
One of the worst Wendy's in America. Because there's two different, see, like, I think, who listens to this? People in Utah? People
everywhere.
Everywhere. Well, if you live in a city, like a big city, like an urban Wendy's, it's like a whole different restaurant experience than like a suburb Wendy's. A suburb Wendy's is really nice. It's good. Like I look forward to it.
We're talking
City
has
Wendy's,
a security guard.
City Wendy's suck. Yeah, if you need like a passcode to go to the bathroom, that Wendy's sucks.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of those in LA. So I don't even go to Wendy's in LA. I love Wendy's. I go to Wendy's like a lot.
It's my pre-open mic Wendy's stop is that one right there. And I always have to laugh because it's always the same security guy.
Awful.
And he cleans up the dining room.
You know what's funny? That Wendy's, I saw a dude, you know, like people pull out laptop. It would be weird to pull out your laptop in a Wendy's, right? Because this ain't a, you know, coffee shop. Come on. But this dude pulled out a desktop computer. I saw a dude, I swear to God. He is like a gaming type computer console. Yeah. So he pulled out a deck, or like, what do you call it? Whatever
the
tower. Big tower, yeah. A tower and a monitor and a keyboard. So it's an interesting place.
I mean, I guess in a way, props to him. He wasn't working on a screenplay.
Yeah.
No, so, I mean,
guys,
that's what you see everywhere.
Nobody's working on a screenplay at Wendy's.
So I always loved when I was living in Burbank, the Starbucks that's right there next to the Vons on Pass Avenue. I would always love walking in there, and every single table is full with a guy in the laptop, and like the what's his name? Sid Field. Is that his name?
Oh yeah, the screenplay book.
Yeah, every single one of them had like either that or Save the Cat. Like sitting next to their laptop, and it was always so funny to me just to walk in.
I wonder if the guys
cookie cutter.
Yeah, you probably make a lot of money. Like if you're trying to write a screenplay, you should just write a book telling people how to write screenplays. That'd be way better. But you shouldn't go to Starbucks though. Do you go to Starbucks?
I do. I'm not the biggest coffee snob, so I'll go wherever there's coffee. But
you shouldn't go because Starbucks. See, I'm from Seattle. Starbucks. It's owned by Howard Schultz. You know Howard Schultz?
Is that the Peanuts guy?
Peanuts.
That's Charles Schultz.
Oh,
it's like...
Yeah, man. No, I got so many causes. I got to keep them straight, so don't confuse me. Starbucks, Howard Schultz owns Starbucks. He sold the Sonics to those dudes from Oklahoma City.
Right.
So I don't go to Starbucks anymore. I'm hanging on to that.
I still have my Kevin Durant Sonics jersey.
Oh.
So, and my Sean Kemp one.
Nice.
I also have the 96 Western Conference Championship band.
Damn, man.
Yeah,
there
it's,
you go.
The Sonic love runs deep in me.
Okay, well, don't go to Starbucks.
That,
there you go.
Yeah, that now has ruined
Starbucks.
If I can
convince, recruit one person at a time. I'm like a Bernie bro, but for anti-Starbucks.
I've always thought it was funny with Starbucks that most places when you have an addiction, they want you to like find help, whereas Starbucks celebrates it and gives you a gold card.
Yeah.
So when I got that gold card in the mail the first time, I was like, I have a problem.
Somebody told me that you can, there's like a way now with their loyalty membership that you can really like basically get Starbucks for free. Like if you game the system right. Don't press me on the details. Don't ask me what it's called. I read one Facebook status and I barely even read it all. But there's some program out there. If you really do love Starbucks and you can't stop going, at least look into the program to see how much you can, you know, cost them money.
Everybody's going to be like tweeting you now, like, wait, you got to tell me, how do I game the system? How do I game
it? Somehow I doubt that, but okay.
So now, I know we were talking a little as we were setting up everything here, but like I said, I think we had kind of crossed paths at Flappers and Burbank a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. But how long have you been doing doing stand-up now?
I've been doing stand-up like 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I started in Seattle, moved to Boston for a little bit, moved back to Seattle, and then down to Los Angeles about 6 years ago. So,
how was it doing comedy in Boston? I always hear so many... the rough and tumble stories, but it's also such a great scene.
You know what I always say about Boston is it's very competitive, but not like snipey.
Yeah.
You know, like it's very competitive, but in a good way. Like it would up your game. Like you'd watch people and you'd be like, like one of the best clubs there is the Comedy Studio, and it's like, you know, it's just like a showcase club. You know, so it'd be like 10 acts on every Friday and Saturday, but then you would go on and you'd be like working on a couple things and maybe, you know, do a couple of your more regular jokes. But then you'd go on and someone would go on, like Shane Moss or some Joe Wong or one of these guys would go on in front of you and you'd be like, oh. And then you'd have to like totally reshuffle your set and just like just the hits. Just doing just the hits tonight. Because it really made you tighten that. I came back from Boston really tight, you know, like cut a lot of fat off the jokes. Seattle was a place where I really built a lot of time because I got a ton of stage time and it was like a lot of rambling and stuff. But, I'm sorry. Boston is where I sharpened it quite a bit, you know. So
that's one of the perks for people, I mean, starting out here is they get a lot of that stage time. But, yeah, it's not quite as sharp like that where you have to refine. That's what I've loved. Los Angeles, a lot of people think that it's super cutthroat. I feel like it's a very uplifting, I mean, it's still cutthroat, but
no, well,
I feel like it's a strong community that lifts you quite a bit and challenges you to be
the difference I'd say between Los Angeles and Boston is there's a lot of differences, but one of them is when you do get a great show in Boston and you do really well, it like resonates, you know, people like take notice, like, oh, hey, there's this new guy. I just saw him at, you know, the Vault or whatever. Mm-hmm. He had an awesome set, and people kind of care and talk about it. But in Los Angeles, there's a million funny people, like hugely talented people. And not only that, even if there weren't, people just don't care. Everyone's trying to survive.
Right.
And even if you're not, even if you're doing really good, then it's this whole another world of, like, insulation where it's like, I'm doing really good, but now there's all these other worlds of opportunity open to me, so I don't have time to shoot the shit about who's coming up and what's fun. And so it's a lot harder to make things resonate. That's the way it is. I mean, it's just more competitive, you know. So I guess it should be that way.
Yeah. But now, had you always wanted to do comedy growing up, or when was it that you finally had recognized that it was kind of the career path that you wanted to go down?
I think I knew I wanted to do it as a career probably in college, I guess. It never occurred to me that you could do it. I guess a lot of guys say this, but yeah, I wanted to try it, you know, and I was a fan of stand-up and stuff, but I didn't know you could make a living off of it. I didn't know, like, I thought you were either famous or you were just, like trying it.
Yeah,
I didn't know. Like, I didn't know there was like a
there's a whole process like a middle class
of, you know, yeah, or like a living wage. Like you could just make like $50,000 a year.
Yeah,
doing stand up. That was just like would have never occurred to me. So I didn't think it was like realistic. But then in college, when I was going to school about an hour north of Seattle, and I would come down every weekend. And then I was in I had a journalism major, and then that's when I knew though I directed everything to just make sure I could get an internship in Seattle so I could do stand up all the time. So that's kind of what I knew. And then I quit. I got a news radio job that I quit to move to Boston. And that's when I guess I was like all in.
Yeah.
I still didn't make any money doing stand up. Probably for, you know, I lost a ton of money living in Boston, you know, burned through a lot of savings and stuff. But then by the time, you know, I got back to Seattle, I had a lot of road work set up, and it was kind of, I guess, a professional from that point on. But
was there anybody that you were kind of listening to while coming up that was kind of influencing you the most?
Yeah, the guys I listened to the most were Attell, I guess Hedberg when I was really early on. Those were and Steve Martin. I guess those are the three CDs I listened to the most. The Mitch Altogether, the Skanks for the Memories, Attell, and then like a that's when like Napster was around or whatever. But I got like basically a composition of Steve Martin's stuff, you know, like Comedy Isn't Pretty and a couple other ones mashed together.
Born Standing Now.
Yeah, so I, those were the three I probably like burned out in my car CD player, you know, listened to over and over and over again. And then everything else, I listened to a ton of other stuff. I listened to like a lot of Woody Allen. I listened to, you know, Regan. I listened to Gaffigan. I don't really listen. I don't know, how is it with you? Do you listen to a lot of, like, comedy albums?
What's funny is I'll buy a lot of them, because I want to support the comedians that I love, and then when I, like, a friend releases their album, I'm like, yeah, I got to support that.
Yeah.
But then, like, it'll take me forever to actually get around to listening to it, because I don't want to have that in my head.
Yeah. It's not even a strategic choice for me. It's just I don't know if it's a fatigue, or it's just, like, a sort of, it's hard to... Like, I listen to, like, sports podcasts and, like, stuff about, like you know, politics or analytics or whatever. Like, I just don't... now I do comedy so much, I guess, that I just... It's not...
It burns you out a little bit.
Yeah, and, like... Yeah, and maybe there is something to that where you're like, I don't want to hear everybody else because, you know, it has a way of seeping in, but...
Yeah, and like there was a joke I'd written a while back that was about autoerotic asphyxiation. And it was really funny to me that I was just like, I swear somebody else has this bit.
Yeah.
And like I kept going just scouring through things. It's like, I know something. Then I found out Marin has one, not even the same, but somehow it was in my head. And that's the thing, like, man.
You drive yourself crazy now. Yeah. Because so especially like online, everybody's the comedy police.
Yeah.
Everybody's a comedy police. They're like, they think, oh, this, like Amy Schumer, all this stuff, she stole all these jokes. It's like, you guys don't understand how common it is that two people can write the same joke. Like, I don't know why that, maybe it's because the people making these things can't write a joke, so they think it's impossible that two people could come up with the same conclusion, but it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Just in small, before the internet was really, like when I first started, you know, 11 years ago, internet was obviously, it was around, but it wasn't like,
yeah, it was still fairly young.
Even in that small community, guys would come up with the same premises and jokes, and there were accusations, but guys would hash it out. But I could tell, you can tell when someone's ripping off somebody, and when somebody's like, it's just, and that happens more often than I think the general public understands. Yeah, it's not in their
voice. When they're ripping somebody off, it doesn't come off in their voice.
Yeah,
and that's when it always sticks out to me, where I'm like, that's not.
But it's like the thing with Amy Schumer. Do you think she really stole like this one joke?
Yeah.
And then she's like, okay, I can write an hour, but I need this one.
Write an hour. Can I need this one joke. A couple of TV shows.
Yeah, yeah. I have 58 minutes, and I could tape a special, but I need to go like to Wendy Liebman and steal one joke.
Yeah.
Before I can finish, like I just don't believe it.
There was the guy last year that tried to sue Conan, saying that he had stolen a few of his jokes.
Right.
And they were fairly obvious jokes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the, yeah. Well, and that's a whole other thing. Another thing she got, Amy Schumer got in trouble with, but like the her TV show, they were like, oh, she stole somebody's, I think it's like Kathleen Madigan's bit for a sketch. But it's like, do you understand how TV shows work? There's like a bunch of writers.
Yeah.
Like Amy Schumer is not writing every sketch on her show. So maybe did one of the writers see Kathleen Madigan and did it seep in? I guess it's possible. But it's also very possible that it's just another person made the same connection and conclusion. So it's like, that's just comedy. It's going to happen.
And if people watch late night shows too, they'll see every host out there during their opening monologue will almost do the same version of a joke if there's a big story.
I mean, yeah.
Every one of them has done some iteration of Chris Christie
fat
eating
joke.
Something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it, I mean, they're fairly obvious. Even as I've been going through Second City and like late night writing is like the key thing that I'm focused on. And it's like, I'll try to, as I'm writing monologue jokes, say, okay, well, is this the obvious joke? What else can I write with that?
Right.
And then even as I'm watching later on the next day, like, I'll hear the story come up, and I know the sites they're looking at, and I'll hear them start with the setup, and I'm just like, all right, I'm interested to see where they go with this one.
Well, it's like you, that is the thing, when I don't know about other people, but you're right, when I write, I try to like, okay, this is the first conclusion my brain made. Now we need to take it a few more, a little farther down the trail to see where that ends up. Because if you're just always going to the first conclusion, it's like
it's whatever
someone else, then an audience member could have wrote that joke. You know, like,
you don't
so
want
that's
the audience
art of comedy
see it coming.
Is getting as far away from, you know, the obvious thing while still letting the audience catch up when you make the joke so that it's funny.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to do a bunch of not getting laughs.
Yeah, the audience sees it coming from
a mile
away.
Everyone needs to, like, calm down a little bit. I mean, I think, there are definitely cases where people have been ripped off. I just read this thing on Facebook today. Some guy out of Austin ripped off Quinn Dale. You know Quinn Dale? His whole act, some guy ripped off, like, his whole act or something. And did some really devious stuff. So, like, that stuff, yes. Like, you band together and you shame that person. But I don't know.
I've had one joke stolen from me once, and I knew that they stole it because they did it like 2 weeks after I had told it to them.
Right.
And it was exactly how I said
it. Wait, you told it to them?
Yeah, they. It was a thing that it was a joke writing thing that we were doing, and I had told it to them, and they laughed, and then I didn't ever do it because I realized it's not that good of a joke.
Yeah.
And then I had to laugh to myself, and I saw them try it, and it bombed, and I was like, so you for stealing my joke, especially not a good one.
That's the legacy. I don't know if that's the legacy you want. Someone stealing your stuff and then it bombing.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bad joke. It was when I was first starting and learning to write. But I thought it was funny that they chose to steal a joke that wasn't even good.
Yeah.
And that, they kind of got theirs on that. I was just like, man, you can keep peddling that one. That one's on you now. Never had to see the light of day coming from my mouth.
Yeah.
So. So now, as you got to Los Angeles, how long was it before, you know, things started picking up out there where you started getting to be kind of more of a regular? What were the rooms that you were hitting up out there primarily?
I mean, I don't know. The places I got the most spots at, people wouldn't even have heard of. Like Bruco is where I got a bunch of out in Westwood. That's where I did a lot of time. Like, let's see, where I first got out there, just like, you know, there's this place, the Days Inn, out in Glendale. And this dude, it used to be run by this guy named Blackwater. Blackwater was this, like, black dude, and he always wore, like, military fatigues. And I never made the connection at the time, but I wanted to ask him, but I was scared of him, if it was, like, the nickname came from, like, Blackwater, that security firm.
Yeah.
Remember they were in the news a lot a long time ago? So, anyway, he wouldn't host the show or anything, and he wasn't a comedian. He just produced this open mic. So he'd get up there at the beginning of every show and talk about, you know, respect the room. We run a clean show. If you swear, I'm going to come up. I'm going to get you off stage. We got a family show. And there'd be nobody there. It was at a Glendale, like, Days Inn extended stay. So everybody was there in the bar. Everybody in the bar was like...
It was just another college.
You know, no, like divorced dads.
Oh, jeez.
Like really sad. people who just needed an extended stay. If you need an extended stay hotel, your life usually is not.
They've got their U-Haul out front.
Yeah, some of the guys just drinking. So I was like, why is it a family show? No one ever understood, because apparently there might be kids in the lobby, or the Days Inn didn't want like cuss words echoing out into the lobby or something. So he would get on there and make this big spiel, and then he'd go on and on about the parking. Blackwater, he'd be like, we're the only show in LA with free parking. You see outside? What'd you see outside? Like, he'd get really mad. Like, what'd you see outside? You saw a big parking lot, didn't you? That's free parking. We're the only show. It's like, you're preaching to the choir, man. We're here. I don't know. You should have sold this on the flyer or something. So that was a show I did a lot. But then, it was the best. The club that was good to me first was the Ice House
in Pasadena.
That club was good to me. And then the Improv came
the one around on Melrose?
Or? Yeah. They were cool. But again, even if you're like a quote unquote regular there, it's still not like if you're a regular at, Wise Guys in Utah or, Giggles in Seattle where I started. It's not like every weekend you get like a couple of spots or get a spot once a week or something. It's like you're down on the roster so far underneath, and then there's all these celebrity dudes who drop in, can bump you back. So they really, you can get a, it's very hard still to get stage time, just a spot. Like, unless you're on a show run by a comic who wants you, or like, you know what I mean? There's like ways around it. But if you're just trying to do like the traditional sending your avails every week and wait around for your,
And I know the improv now, theirs is basically you show up like 2 hours early, you put your name down, and they just draw you out. Like,
The open mic
anymore. Yeah, that's the open.
I meant more just like the actual spots. Yeah, like the paid spots, which those are just few and far between as far as like. So you gotta find everything out. You gotta piece it all. It's a lot of work. It's just, I always say, it's just as much work as getting booked on the road as making sure I stay booked in LA. And those shows don't pay. That's not how I pay the bills. But that's why you're there.
Yeah.
So
it's more or less almost the networking out there that is what, in a way, is like the pay of who you get to know out there, kind of while doing it. And
you'd hope.
And a lot of the times, depending on the day, it can be a great room. So I've done open mic at the Comedy Store where it was literally nobody in the room and a few crazy homeless people that were on the show that I was a little scared I was going to get shivved by afterwards. So, there's definitely some very strange rooms, but at the same time, you can also have somebody stand in the back of the room that's, the celebrity drop-in in, like, the original room or the belly room or something, and it's just like, oh, that's not something you get necessarily everywhere else.
Yeah. It's a crazy place, man. But, so now it's going pretty good. Like, I can usually get spots when I need to. And but like I said, you piece it together. Yeah. There's all these alt rooms, And, they call them alt rooms, but they're really like, there's more of that than traditional shows.
Oh, yeah. There's the fish and chips one that's there in Los Feliz? Is that the one that it is?
Oh, the fish taco place.
Yeah, fish taco.
Yeah, fish taco. Yeah, it's like one of the hottest shows. Meltdown's obviously the hottest show.
Meltdown is honestly one of my absolute favorite rooms. I don't know why. Because it's just, it's not much bigger than this room. But I love it. Just the atmosphere there, the cricket.
Yeah.
So everything about that room just somehow makes me feel good.
Yeah, when I was, when I did it, the last time, a few months ago, or this summer, before I was doing it to run the Conan set, right? And so I'm in the green room, and Zach Galifianakis just dropped in to do it. So, and that's, he's dropping in there. He's not dropping in at the Improv, you know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying. Like, they call them alt rooms, but that's now, like, the new traditional, at least in L.A., it's like...
I always think it's funny when it's, especially over at Meltdown, because it's like, unless it's like the Meltdown show or like Pardo show or Harmontown, like people don't necessarily just wander over to see what's going on, and they don't realize that that room does have, like, Galifianakis will drop in, or Sarah Silverman. There's been several times and she's just all of a sudden there.
Well, like, and the best shows are like at Largo.
Yeah.
And so, again, like, not a traditional comedy venue.
Yeah,
right?
Garland
like,
ran his podcast there for a while. I know Kevin Smith does a bunch of his stuff there, and
but that's what I mean. So like when guys talk about like alt comedy versus like I don't even know what the other word is, like road comedy. I think that still exists in like other markets, you know, but in like LA, New York, it's so blended, it's incestuous, you know, people do other room that it's, I think it's all kind of the same thing now.
Yeah, they all blend together for me. Yeah. Like when I hear people mention them, like they're all just the same thing to me.
Any comic worth anything can do both.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a real comic, you can come on the road and do a club, and you can go back and do a comic book store in LA, you know. If you're like, ah, these guys, they don't get me or whatever, then you're just playing to like a select group, and I don't know if that's if that's real stand up. I mean, it has its place, but it's not what I was. The guys I always like looked up to, I think, could play anywhere, you know. So that's what I try to do.
So now, as far as writing goes, I know you wrote on a Norm Macdonald sports show. How did that kind of come about?
I had a an agent when I first moved down there with Innovative, and then they knew that I wrote this like sports blog, like a humor blog, sports related stuff. And so there's this position that opened up when they were doing the show, and they asked me to submit something for it, and interviewed, and I got it, which was like so amazing because like Norm Macdonald was like one of my favorite comedians, one of the reasons why I got into it. Like when we were talking before, I never listened to his stuff because he didn't have like the album. He had like the sketch album.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that, but he didn't have like the stand-up album.
I think he only released a stand-up album, what, like 4 or 5 years ago?
With Comedy Central. It was all in part of like promoting the show. So, but like the interviews and the stuff on Conan and the stuff on Letterman, I'd watched like a million times. So it was like so surreal and crazy to be able to do that.
Hello,
and it was like really amazing experience. But also, what you realize, like being a comedian and doing that, it's like, oh, it's like a job. Like you show up like at 9 a.m, you leave at like 7 or 8 at night.
Yeah, it's like a 12-hour day.
It's like a gig. it's like the job you were trying to avoid doing stand up. So as fun as it was and amazing as it is, and I met some of these like incredible writers, like guys like Steve O'Donnell, people who'd written on like Letterman and The Simpsons, and Frank Sebastiano wrote on like Weekend Update with Norm, wrote Dirty Work and stuff.
Yeah.
Like those guys. So that was incredible to like just be around those guys and meet those guys. But I think what I learned from that was I would rather just go to a hotel room and go to a comedy club, you know what I mean? And write my own shit and perform it and knock it out. And that's because it's like so, it's like the perfect thing to me.
What would you say is like probably the greatest thing you took away from being able to work with someone like Norm and work with some of those other writers?
Well, from Norm, just the I don't give a fuck sort of attitude. Like, oh my god, just couldn't care less if that show had made it or not. And it didn't. So maybe that's a lesson there.
I don't think he even realizes sometimes how much he's loved. Like, the first time I met him, he didn't realize that people actually gave a shit
when
he was there.
And he's the smartest. He plays dumb sometimes, but he's the smartest guy in any room at any time. Even with those writers, there's some smart writers. Like, Steve O'Donnell, like, he invented the top 10 list for Letterman. He's written amazing things, like Comedy Hall of Fame, comedy writer. But even he was like an encyclopedia of just like Jeopardy type knowledge. But I think even he was like, Norm is like so effing smart. And
he's just quiet in that way.
Yeah, and he
doesn't let it
rhyme. He's like kind of messing with people when they don't know they're being, you know what I mean? Like, he's just really, really smart. And but with my takeaway from it was like, he knew he was like talented. He knew he had fans, and he knew he had stand-up, and that's all he really cares about. And he loves his fans, and you know, he loves his comedy peers and stuff. And I don't think I really don't think he cared if that show. Now there were producers who cared, and they were trying desperately, like really trying to fight, you know, to keep the show on and change things to make the network like it and stuff. But Norm just that noise was completely shut out. And I was like, man, that's pretty, It'd be nice to be in a position. Imagine getting your own TV show, right?
Finally. Three. Yep. Okay.
And I know what I would do. I do it with gigs. I want everyone to like me. I want it to go well. I want to get another one of the, like, you get booked at a club, you're like, oh, I hope I do a good job so I can get booked back. But the true greats are like, they'll come to me, man. I mean, if you got the talent,
They'll find me. They'll come got my number.
And if this isn't good, then I'll get the next thing. And it's like, this stuff doesn't matter, you know? So that was pretty inspiring to see that kind of attitude.
So now when you did get to finally submit for that, so I've heard actually with his show, it was like a 48-hour turnaround to submit your packet. Was that kind of how it was for you? Or did they kind of base it off of the blog that you were already writing?
No, I was a little later, I think, than the right, because there were people who wrote on the pilot, and then there were people who got picked up for the, I didn't have anything to do with the pilot, and I was brought in more as like a digital component to, like, they needed someone to like run their blog and then, you know, pitch ideas, so that we could be like tied in to the whole, like, getting people to, you know, like, you watch like At Midnight Now or shows like that, they're like, oh, here's a joke, but also, or like John Oliver, it's like, here's, at the end they do a joke and it's like, there's a hashtag, and then everyone, like, the make Donald Trump again or whatever. So that's kind of what I think their vision for it was, like,
to make it more interactive.
Make it more interactive. And then, so that's why I was brought in to, like, run their blog and then do stuff like that for the show. Honestly, like, trying to pitch shit like that to Norm was just the worst. And I learned quick to just, like, not even try, because he didn't want, you know, he got into Twitter through that show.
Yeah.
He started a Twitter for that show.
That was how I found out.
And his Twitter account is insane. Like, Twitter account is insane. And the one thing we did do that was really fun is we did these, like, Normcast things where he would,
and some of the shows,
you would, like, mute your basketball game or the Masters or something, and he would just do play for you, which is what he does on his Twitter account anyway, if you ever watch, like, if there's a big golf event going on. And so, so it was, like, a little, it was a good learning curve for me, because, like, it's like, you think you have these, like, amazing ideas, and then people are like, okay. I remember I was in the room with one of the executive producers and Norm, and I had my big legal pad, yellow legal pad filled with ideas, you know, and I was so excited to, like, pitch all these ideas, and I think I got like 2.5 in, and they were people were like looking around and like, you know what, I'm just gonna go back to the computer and come up with some new ideas. So. But then at the end, I, like, when I was pitching jokes, I got a lot better, you know, feedback. But just jokes. And what I learned is, like,
that's what
he just wanted. He just wants jokes. He just loves jokes. And these, like, they try to make us do, like, videos, you know, and because they're like Tosh, everything like Tosh. Do the blog like Tosh, because Tosh is like the big hit show.
Then Rob Dyrdek was like, I can just rip off this show.
Yeah, and speaking of which, so Tosh hated Dyrdek, and Tosh hated us because we were using, like, funny videos now, and we were on the same channel as him. So he thought he should have right of first refusal to every internet video, you know.
Because WebSoup didn't initially come up with that.
No, I know, and that's a whole other thing. But so, like, we would, as the show was, like, getting in the second half, and they were tweaking and things, funny videos became a big thing, and I don't think Norm, he didn't like that, because he was like, well, if the video's funny, then what am I gonna, like, when you watch, it's like, true, like, you brought up Dyrdek, like, they don't have jokes on that show.
No.
They show a funny video and they laugh. And so Norm's like, if it's a funny video, that's the joke. I don't have
it. It's like frat guys watching YouTube. That's all that show ever was to me. Frat guys watching YouTube.
So, and I think Tosh, in his defense, does a better job of, like, creating humor to supplement the funny videos. You know, and Tosh is a genius, and he's so funny. So that's obviously, like, the gold standard for that type of show. But anyway, it's not what I think Norm wanted to do, but Comedy Central. That's what I'm talking about. And then he was like, eventually, I think we, you know, he tried to make people happy. He just wants to make people happy, but ultimately, he just wants to, like, tell jokes. I think, so.
Yeah, and he gave me, when I first started, some of the best advice, really. because I was still trying to figure out whether I wanted to write or if I wanted to do stand-up or what it was. And it was after a show he had actually done out here.
So
and I was talking to him for a few minutes, and the last thing
he
said was just quickly, you know, just, no matter what you do, you just keep going. You keep your head up. You just keep going. You just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, that has just stuck with me forever.
Yeah.
Just because it was one of those moments where he would, you know, he was somebody I idolized forever, and it was just so genuine. Just, you know, figure out something's not working. Why? Just keep going. And,
yeah.
Well,
so it's 21.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was like I said, it was a good experience, but it also helped me know, like, I definitely want to do stand-up.
Yeah.
I don't want to be... Now, that being said, if, like, another great job there,
yeah.
The money's pretty tight. I don't think I would turn it down, but I was just checking the time because we got a show.
Yeah, I knew that we've got your show coming up pretty quick here, so... As we kind
of
get ready to wrap here, Conan. So I mean, that was an awesome thing for you to get on there. That was your late night debut, really.
I had done Last Comic Standing, but they chopped it up so much and moved it around that people barely know I was on it. So I don't really, and that wasn't late night. You know, this was like
that
real,
was prime time.
Yeah,
still.
Yeah, this was a real like late night set. So that was. Yeah, it was incredible. It kind of happened fast. I've heard some guys go back and forth with the booker, you know, for a year or more about doing jokes. But I'd sent tapes in, you know, for years, but never heard anything. But then I got a new manager, and he helped, you know, kind of not only he like convinced
That's
me as like, not only do you send in your new tape, and he really we got a good looking, professional looking tape, but also. You let's get some recommendations. So see, I'm too like I would never go to somebody and, like ask like, hey, can you do you mind
you
saying
vouch?
Something? But you know that's what a manager. This guy, Ryan's his name. He's just got no conscience at all. You know, just from New York and just he thinks he's like best friends with everybody. You know, so he just went to people who knew me, you know, and liked me and asked, and they were like, of course, yeah. And so I think that's what really helped, and then. After that, JP, the booker, he got back. He's like, I like this joke, this joke, this joke, and this joke. And I was like, in my head, I was like, well, that's 5 minutes of jokes. That should be a set, right? So I was like, does that mean that? And then he was like, yeah. He's like, well, send me a tape of that in that. And I sent that in. I mean, the whole thing was like 3 months. So it happened really fast. And then you like build it up in your head like, oh, it's going to. But I mean, I was trying to be like logical because I think it went pretty good, and
I would definitely say it went well.
Yeah, I was happy with it, but then I was like, you never know what's gonna happen. But it's like nothing's gonna happen. You're gonna do it. It's gonna be fun. You're gonna get some good pictures. You're gonna have a great tape, and then that's it. You know, and then you're gonna go on to the next thing. It's like it's not the like game. It's not like doing the. Carson's Tonight Show,
and
then waking up the next day being a celebrity.
Not intimidating. It's a small stage, and just looking up at the crowd there, it's very compact. And especially when you come out as a stand up, you only kind of get that.
You know what it feels like?
Section.
It doesn't feel like a comedy club because it's not. It's not like you're up and they're down.
Yeah,
it's which is the comedy club dynamic. It's that little black box theater thing, which is a lot of shows in LA are like that. You know, so that kind of gave me some experience. But I would say the weird thing is you're standing back there when the curtains are closed, and you're finally by yourself because I had my wife was with me, and then a bunch of my friends, my manager, and everything. But then they all have to go.
That's where our staff.
And you're standing behind the curtain, and there's just two union guys that kind of look like you. And they're just standing there. And their whole job in life, just pull this curtain, right? And they just don't. They've seen everything. You know, they've had, like, probably the president back there. They don't care. And then they're talking about the drywall or something. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right. And they pull the curtain, and you're out there.
You're out there.
And, like, that's it. And then you turn to your right, and there's Andy Richter and Conan. Like I said, like I hadn't seen those guys before the show, so that was my first time seeing them. And then,
because everyone's scared.
And then, like literally, I did my first joke.
Yeah.
And it was fine. And if you watch it, there's like a brief thing where I don't know what my second joke is. Like it's like it felt to me like an eternity. I played out the whole thing in my head. Like, oh, I'm gonna bomb. I'm gonna forget my joke. I'm just gonna hate me. I'm gonna have to quit comedy. All this stuff. I find it, But you can tell if you look close between my first joke and my second joke, there's like sheer
terror. I'm gonna have to go back and rewatch
it
just so I can see that moment.
And then you can see like how stand up you can cover, you know, like really, like that's what sometimes stand up is. Like that's experience you get from doing it. If I had just written a funny act and did it like 5 times and then tried to do a Conan, when you blank like that, you blank and you're dead. You know, but when you do a million shows and you do the road and the shit happens and drinks fall and all that stuff, that teaches you to like bam, 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 bam. Okay, I found it. And then, so I think that was like a good experience to like have that terror and instill.
So, and then Conan brought you over even.
Yeah. It was super cool. We talked about like off air, we talked a lot about Seattle because his wife's from there, and so he talked about like where he jogs and stuff. And then Andy Richter was really nice afterward, and it was like a really, like I said, all the way around, like couldn't have been a more fun experience, except for reading the YouTube comments. Never read the comments. They were like so brutal. So I mean, like what's funny is like you watch a YouTube video and you're like, oh, this has like a lot, like way more likes than dislikes, like proportionally, like way higher. Everyone liked it almost, you know, 10-to-1 ratio. Okay. But then you read the comments, all negative.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, where were you fuckers who liked the goddamn thing? Like, where were those people?
Yeah.
You know?
Try having the name Tim Drake and then putting out a web show and then having anybody that's a Batman fan. I mean, he's like, fuck this. This isn't the same Tim Drake. It's like, I didn't say it was.
Tim Drake
the third
and Batman?
Robin.
Oh,
and we, like last year we did our first live show at San Diego Comic-Con, and we started tweeting out disclaimers beforehand. This has nothing to do with Batman because in the program it just said on the mic with Tim Drake.
Oh gosh!
Yeah. And we were like, this is San Diego Comic-Con. People aren't going to pay that much attention, and it freaked us out that, oh, people are going to show up in their Batman and Robin cosplay, and then it's just going to be... It was me and my producing partner.
Yeah.
It's just going to be two assholes up there that are just making fun of their entire trip down here. And like, oh, this isn't going to go over well unless we put on a disclaimer. And yeah, I'll get those, and I've just learned to not... Don't read them. Like, they're going to... Totally. Unless they tweet directly at me, which has happened, and then it'll pop up, and I'm like, oh, that's a lovely human being. just have to move on from that one.
Yeah.
So it's been great chatting with you.
Yeah,
so
sorry we have to cut it early, but we got a show we got to do here.
Yeah, well, hey, I was the one that was up here late, so.
I wasn't going to say that. I wasn't going to bring that up, but that is true.
I can own up to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a pleasure. I'm glad that we were able to sit down here. I started thinking about it, and I was like, why have I never talked to him while I'm out in L.A.? Because I always try to do at least 3 or 4 episodes while I'm out there.
Yeah, man.
So, and yeah, I was able to catch you while you were out here. So, and so we've got tonight's show, and then tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So, and this is going up in the morning, so anybody listening to this today in the future.
Yes.
Yeah, tonight.
Tonight. Ogden, Wise Guys, 8 o'clock. Be there.
So tickets are $10, and then Josh was on the show, and just saw him peek his head in here. So and then Alex Valuto, I believe is his name. So I've never seen Alex. So
we're gonna see him.
Yeah, I know he is on. He's on the show tonight as well.
Message me tomorrow, and I'll tell you if those guys are fun. And then it's at Andrew Slater on the Twitter. AndrewComedy.com is the website. People want to check out other dates. They're all on there.
Excellent. Well, thank you again so much. And good luck in the shows this weekend.
Thanks, man.